The Touching the Trail Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Touching the Trail Podcast, our weekly ritual of peace, presence, and perseverance. This week's episode, episode 150, Consistency is Key. Now, 150 episodes of this thing. Every week, sitting down to talk, to chat, to interview, to muse, to think, to wonder, to research, and to share. I'm shocked. I'm not shocked that I made it this far. I'm just shocked that it's been this long of a journey and that it's been this great of a journey. It's been a wild ride, and it's one that I am forever grateful for. It is one that I cannot believe has happened over 150 episodes every single week. In 2016, I missed, I think, 6 weeks spread out throughout the year. That was within the first year of the podcast, so early days then, and it was still when I was like, you know, well, if I don't have a good solid idea, then I just won't do the episode this week. So those excuses equaled about 6 weeks total, I believe, of missed episodes. And I said last year in 2017, I think I even said this year in 2018, that I would make those episodes up and catch up by doing like weeks where I had double episodes or something. And that is still on the books. That is still something I do want to do. I just haven't gotten around to it yet, but I will, so that I could just kind of even out and catch up to where the episodes should be number-wise and everything on a week-to-week basis since the, you know, the when I started this show. So it's a little specific desire, I know, but it's one that I want to accomplish because it does matter to me. It does matter the count number and just how everything kind of plays out over the weeks and over the years. But nevertheless, despite those six, whatever, doesn't really matter. I will catch up one day. I'm at 150, which, like I said, is absolutely incredible to me because it's 150 hours or whatever you want to call it, probably more, maybe less, who knows, you could count, but I don't know, of me talking with fascinating people or me just talking by myself. And it has been, like I said, one wild ride. Now, before we jump into the meat of today's episode, I do want to take care of a little business. First up, the way you can support touchingthetrail.com is by going to touchingthetrail.com/donate to donate to the show. You can do however much you want. You can also go to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak massage tools that I describe as handheld deep tissue massage tools. So find out more via targetreleaserecovery.com, and both those links are in the show notes. Now, there are some two little, like, not even anecdotes per se, little tangents that I do want to talk about before we jump into more of the meat of today's episode, more of my thoughts on 150 episodes, what I've learned, and of course, talking about the title of today's episode, the topic, Consistency is Key. But before we delve into all of that, I did want to tell two little short stories, I guess you can say, little stories of experiences recently in my life. On Thursday, while I was driving back home, I went home this weekend again. I had a 4-day weekend, actually, because I don't have class on Friday, and I didn't have class on Monday because of Veterans Day. So I was driving back home Thursday afternoon, and I usually stop in Santa Barbara for the night, just sleep out of my car, and then leave in the early morning, Friday morning. Kind of splits the 4-hour drive into two-hour drives, split by a good night's rest. So as I was driving down there, and then I stopped in Santa Barbara, grabbed some dinner, and started walking around downtown, I walked over to this coffee shop that I was going to go to called Handlebar Coffee, which, recommendation here, if you ever get yourself out to Santa Barbara, take a gander at Handlebar Coffee online and then maybe take a walk over there because it really is a great coffee shop. I love it. I don't go there all too often because it closes at 5 p.m., which is outrageous to me. I don't know what saying coffee shop closes that early. I would, if I was the coffee shop owners, keep it open until 8 or 9. But nevertheless, they do close at 5, which is a bummer. I forgot that they close at 5. And so I was walking over there. I get there and they were closing up. So unfortunately, I was not able to go to Handlebar Coffee. I did go to some other cool coffee shops that I do enjoy, but it is a bummer I was not able to go there. As I was crossing the street going back, I was crossing and a cop on a motorcycle made a left turn and he kind of cut me off and he was in the middle of the intersection. I stopped in the middle of the intersection. Like, we were kind of like, you know, just waiting to see who would walk, who would go. You know, was he going to go on his motorcycle? Was I going to start walking? What was going to happen? We were staring at each other for like 10 seconds. And finally, I just started walking and kept on walking. And the way he was looking at me and the way he looked at me as he drove by, it struck me later on, as you will find out in a second, something was off, something was weird the way he looked at me. So I kept walking, walked to the street, and I started hearing chanting. I started hearing yells and noises. And I was like, what is that? And I noticed earlier, after that encounter with the cop, that a guy was walked past me with a sign, a big sign. So I walked up closer to State Street, which is like the main street of Santa Barbara. And I look at the corner, and waiting to cross the street is a mass of people. And they start crossing the street, and they begin to chant, "No one's above the law. Trump isn't above the law." So I guess it was a protest that was happening at the same time that I was in Santa Barbara. My dad told me later that there were protests in other areas of the country. So I guess maybe it was a organized thing. I don't know. But nevertheless, I was walking and I watched them for a bit. And it was very odd to watch. It was a protest that seemed to be organized, but also seemed to be disorganized. They had chants going, yes, like the one I just mentioned. But they also had no chance going. They seemed to be a little chaotic at times, like I said. They also, because they didn't move into the street or anything, they stayed on the sidewalks. They were kind of broken up into sections almost by the different blocks. So, you know, a group would start to amass on a block and then they would cross the street and then the light would turn red. And so the group behind them on the block beforehand would have to amass there and wait there and then cross the street. So each block kind of had its own group connected to it as they walked on, kind of their own little mini protest. So they weren't fully connected. They weren't as impressive as a force as they could have been if they were all amassed in one single area and you saw their full might in one glance. But because they were broken up in that way, it was a little unfortunate that they did not send as powerful as a message as I'm sure they intended to. And then they started chanting about weed and about legalized weed, which is fine. I'm not against that or anything, but in terms of the message they were sending and the people in that town, I'm sure it took a hit on their credibility. I think if they were a lot more focused and organized and congealed is a word I will use, I think they would have made a much more powerful message. But like I said, they just did seem a little disheveled, even though that applies to appearance. That's how they appeared overall, I would say. It was a little odd. It was interesting to see, nevertheless. It was exciting to see, to see a show of force like that, something I've seen it before, but not recently in that close proximity. And so to see it again, it was interesting. Like I said, it was nice to see, but I do wish they had it together a little bit more and it would have been even more impressive. I sat in a coffee shop though while it was happening and watched off and on as I did some homework, but like I said, it was good to see. The next day I got home Friday morning, had to do a big detour because of the fires going on in the Malibu, Santa Monica Mountains area, unfortunately. And so when I got home, I, you know, it was nice to be back, nice to see the kittens that we have as a family. Pepper and Ginger are the kittens' names. And it was good to see my dad and everything. And in those 4 days that I was home, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, I watched 4 movies. I watched a movie a day. On Friday, my dad and I went to go see Overlord, and I won't give like full reviews or breakdowns or anything of the 4 movies I'm about to talk about. I will say that of the 4 I saw, I loved all of them, and this isn't a movie podcast, I know, but I will mention them briefly, and if you are interested in hearing more about them, I'd be happy to talk about them and any movie, really, to numb ear, talk about them forever. I love movies, and so feel free to reach out to me via the contact form on the website. I could always talk about movies, but like I said, I saw 4 movies. The first one I saw was on Friday. I saw Overlord, which is the new thriller, horror, supernatural World War II film that takes place during the few hours before, day before D-Day, with some paratroopers and what they find in the backcountry of France, to put it lightly, I guess. I really enjoyed that movie. I was very excited to walk into that theater and watch that movie. My dad was a little more apprehensive. He sometimes likes supernatural type movies and he sometimes doesn't. He was making fun of me for wanting to go see it. He was joking. He was excited, but also I could tell he wasn't as excited as me. I love those types of movies though. So I was really, ecstatic even to walk into the theater. And when we walked out, we both agreed it was incredible. It was awesome. It was action packed the entire time in a variety of ways. And the pacing on the film was, really, really well done. A type of pacing that you don't usually see, the build so slow burning and yet so effective and consistent. I really, really did enjoy that movie, and I would recommend you going to see it if you haven't already. It's a really exciting film. The next movie I saw on Saturday is Hotel Artemis. It stars Jodie Foster and Sophia Boutella, who's also in Star Trek Beyond and Kingsman and The Mummy. Dave Bautista, he plays Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy. Sterling K. Brown, he was in the new Predator movie, which I also loved. That was just a fun movie, the Predator movie. But Hotel Artemis, I really did love on a multitude of levels. And again, this came out a couple months ago, but we saw it at home, watched it on our TV. And again, this was another movie I really, really enjoyed. It had that kind of one-room play aesthetic almost, which I really do love. Movies like Hateful Eight, where it's just one setting and it's more about the conversation and then the action, is really the type of film that I do enjoy. And so Hotel Artemis, while it took place in a hotel and so it technically wasn't one room, it very much felt like a one room play. And so I really did enjoy that aspect of it. And those constrictions really, I would say, provided a lot to kind of furthering the action and the plot as the movie went along. It's a really compelling movie in the sense that it's the character plays and the character dynamics are really well done. And again, another movie I would recommend you to go see if you want an exciting action film that provides a deeper level than most action films. I really did enjoy that one. The next one I saw, again in the theater on Sunday, was The Girl in the Spider's Web, which is the reboot / sequel, I don't know how to describe it, of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series, done by Columbia Pictures, I believe. And there was one that came out in 2011, Daniel Craig. And then they took a big break / hiatus / they just didn't make any more. They were planning on making the trilogy of those books, but they didn't. So then this is the, like I said, sequel, because it's another one of those books, another one in the Millennium series of books that is about this character, Lisbeth Salander. But it's a new actress playing Lisbeth Salander and new actors and actresses all the way around. So it's kind of odd. I don't know how to categorize it. Claire Foy plays Lisbeth Salander in the starring role. And again, action-packed film that, again, the pacing was really well done. And I love the mix of like just pure action and also spy thriller and also psychological thriller. I really do enjoy those movies, and I love the Swedish versions starring Naomi Rapace, if that's how you pronounce her name. Of course, the Hollywood ones are also well done, and this one I would classify as a Hollywood one. They didn't have any big Hollywood names in it, per se. A lot of British actors and, of course, Swedish actors. Nevertheless, though, again, another movie I'd recommend. Psychological aspect of it is really, really dark, but done in a really superb way. The movie I saw yesterday on Monday, I watched it for the first time. We watched it, my sister, my dad, and I, downstairs on our new TV. It's like I can't remember the size, it's like a 65-inch TV, 4K, so it looks great. My sister and I, for the first time, we watched The Shining. Now, I am apprehensive of, and in some other cases ambivalent to, horror movies and horror as a genre. I used to describe myself as deathly afraid almost of horror movies, genre, and everything in between. And so I avoided them like the plague. I have found that I have evolved as a person, if that's the right word to use in this context. And now horror doesn't really affect me in the way that it used to, or at least I haven't noticed it as such. I went to Hollywood Horror Nights in Universal Studios in mid-September with my sister, and that is supposed to be extremely scary, and it was just really fun, but it wasn't really scary. And then, of course, The Shining is a classic horror film, thriller, psychological thriller, and it didn't really bother me all that much. It didn't bother me. It really just made me appreciate film even more, and I just watched it as a great movie. But it didn't really scare me in the way that I thought it would. Deeply scare me, as most horror movies did in the past. So I think I'm kind of evolving out of my fear of horror as a genre, and I would like to delve more into it if that is the case. But I digress. The Shining, absolutely incredible. I am, in these past few months, since the beginning of summer, I have very much turned myself into a cinephile. I don't quite know why, but I've been really enjoying it. Just the practice of watching movies, the practice of learning about movies behind the scene, stories, and just trivia, and just how these masterpieces were made. I've been really enjoying building my kind of film education over these past few months, and The Shining was very much on that list of film education. I love Stanley Kubrick and what he does. I know I sound very much like the stereotypical hipster cinephile by saying that, but 2001 A Space Odyssey is one of my favorite movies of all time. A distinct shift from my initial opinion of that movie after I watched it for the first time this summer, which was that I practically hated it. But after watching it a second time and doing more research about what that movie means and holds and is for me, it has, my opinion has turned around 180 degrees to one of love. And The Shining is very much on that list as well. I can easily see why it is lauded as one of the best movies of all time, and why it is lauded as such a great movie. I truly, truly enjoyed it, and I am dying to watch it again, to parse more from it and to delve more into it, because there is so much there to pay attention to and to watch and to listen to, and so much to break down. I know, again, like I said, I'm well aware that it is stereotypical to love Kubrick and Tarantino as a self-described cinephile, but I do, and I can't help it. They just make really good movies, but especially Kubrick. Tarantino I love more for the just the pure fun of those movies, but Kubrick, the amount of commentary, societal commentary, and truths, honestly, that he weaves into his movies is stunning. And I really do think that, and it's something that I want to delve more into by watching more of his films and learning more about his creative process and what he built over his lifetime. So those are the four movies that I watched over 4 days, my little mini reviews of each. The general consensus is that I loved all of them. Being honest, it's rare that I come across a movie that I dislike or that I have large critiques for. Of course, every movie you could critique, and many I do, but very generally and surfacely, honestly, most movies I just enjoy because I can understand, you know, when it's just a fun action movie or a fun just popcorn movie, I can enjoy it for a fun popcorn movie. I don't have to get mad at it or critique it or something. When it's a deeper, more complex, more intricately weaved film, then I can love it for what it is and for what it brings to me, and hold that on the list of movies that I love for more than just it being a popcorn movie. When I say popcorn movies, for example, between the dichotomy between these two categories that I'm making in my head, when I say popcorn movies, I mean like movies like Pirates of the Caribbean or The Mummy with Brendan Fraser, those two series. I love those, but they're just fun movies. When I say the deeper, more complex films, I mean Apocalypse Now, 2001 A Space Odyssey, Planet of the Apes, movies like those, movies that really do hold a lot, in my opinion. So, but like I said, I digress. That is, I think, a long enough time to be talking about movies. But as you can tell, I've been really enjoying just watching movies these past few months and falling more and more in love with the art of film, I guess. Now, let me move into a topic that I am excited to talk about, because it's one that has provided me a lot of reflection over this past week since it happened, and it's something that I think gave me a lot of perspective on my life, on what I do, and what is and isn't possible. The elevator pitch competition. Now, I mentioned this last week, and it happened. I mentioned it that it was going to be happening the next day after I posted last week's episode, last Tuesday, and it did indeed happen last Wednesday at 4:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. last Wednesday was the event, the elevator pitch competition, and it went swell. Odd word to use, I know, but it went wonderfully. I really did enjoy myself, and the short and sweet story behind this is that I lost. I did not win the money. My pitch did not win the $1,000 award, nor the $500 audience choice award. Now, before I tell you who did win, let me just break this down a little bit. Now, the elevator pitch competition is a competition, if you missed last week's episode or if you forgot, where students from Cal Poly and Cuesta, which is the local community college here in SLO, in San Luis Obispo, pitch an idea in 90 seconds. It's an elevator pitch. It's as if you were standing in an elevator with some investor or CEO or some other important business contact, and you had 90 seconds or less to pitch them your business idea. Now, the first round of applicants or applications, you pitch that idea into a camera, you posted it on YouTube, and then you applied to the competition. In terms of Cal Poly's entrance, about 13 semifinalists were chosen. I was one of them. And then you pitched your idea again in person in front of a panel of four judges, and that's it. You're in a conference room, and it's just you and those four judges. I did that, I think it was 2 weeks ago now, maybe 3 weeks ago. And it went well. It went really well. I really did think that it went well, and it did, because I was moved up to the finalist round, which is the top five. And then I think the same process happens at Cuesta, and the top five are chosen from there. So, like I said, it went... I made it... That's really what this whole event comes down to, is my pride and my gratitude in the fact that I made it to the top five here at Cal Poly in the top 10 overall. I think that's a really wonderful fact and exciting fact that I made it to the top five, to the top 10 overall. And it shows the validity, the power, and the realness, even though that's not the best word to use, of my idea of target release recovery. And it gives me a lot more gratification in the sense that this company is already real. It already exists online and in person at events and such. But with what these judges, you know, deciding to move me to the finalist round, to give me a chance to the finalist round, what I did not mention is then you pitch on a stage in front of an audience with panel of judges as well, but you also have a full audience. And that night there were about 150 people and the panel of judges of four judges. So if you let that affect you, that can be a lot of pressure and cause you a lot of agita, that there's so many people watching you and your idea, and bearing yourself for them on stage is something that a lot of people have to grapple with and process and build confidence within. So, like I said, I digress though again, and when it comes down to it, I am just proud that I made it to the finals, because it's my idea, it's my company, and that has shown me yet again how viable this company is. And as I have talked about many, many times before, the situations in your life and how you let them affect you, it's all up to you, that response. You can either react or you can take a moment and respond. And I could have reacted to my loss with anger, with frustration, with hate, with dislike, with all of those various negative emotions aimed at my friend who did win and the other people in the audience there, the judges and the other contenders. Or I could take a moment, take a breath, and respond with acceptance and with understanding and with embracing the lessons that I learned from this whole experience. Now, I have beat around the bush enough. My friend, Alyssa, is the person who won. She had an idea about this online tool that helps you shop local, is the basic idea. And she won both the Cal Poly Award and the Audience Choice. So she was awarded $1,500, which I am very, very excited for her. And I'm glad, ecstatic even, that she was provided that opportunity to help her idea go forward and enter into reality. So like I said, I could have directed my anger or my frustration at her idea, or at the judges or at anybody there in that room that night. Or I could respond with embracing my own experience there and being grateful for what I learned and for what happened there. And like I said, this experience was worthwhile. It was exciting and it was fun for me. It helped me deeply, deeply refine and redefine my rhetoric around target release recovery, the rhetoric around how I speak about it and even how I think about it, how I will market it in the future, how I present it to customers and to potential vendors and everything like that. It has deeply helped me kind of think through all of those various approaches to how to talk about this company. It also gave me, of course, practice pitching, obviously, which is a vital skill. It put me in front of an audience again, which I haven't done in a while. And it gave me, like I said, a deeper confidence in this idea, and even more so in the cut. It's not even an idea anymore. You know, I'm wary to call it that because it is a real life company. And so even more confidence in this company and this reality that is Target Release Recovery. That night, there were a few solid pitchers, but the majority, I would say, there's 10 overall, 5 from Cal Poly, 5 from Cuesta, and I would say the majority were okay. They were mediocre, I would say. They were very, very nervous, and that's the main reason why I would say they were mediocre, is because you could see their nervousness shine through. Unfortunately, the first guy who went up, number one, up to pitch that night, he had a complete breakdown, which is terrible. And I feel very, very bad for him, but I can't really feel that bad, honestly, because he knew it was coming. He had weeks to prepare, and he obviously didn't prepare himself enough to get up on that stage and deliver his pitch with confidence and with power. He got up and mumbled and jumbled his pitch. He repeated the same 3 things 5 different times. He heaved and sighed. He turned away from the audience. He was deeply, deeply nervous. You could tell. He even got to a point where he said, the eyes. So he even said the eyes for all of the people looking at him. He was that affected by the audience. Near the end of his pitch, he got to a point where he told everyone that he pitches much better and talks about the idea much better in casual conversation. So if anybody wants to talk to him about the idea afterwards, that would be a much better venue, and please do that. And he's very sorry. Then he got off stage in a few more seconds. He went way past 90 seconds. I don't think anybody had the heart to stop him. I think it would have been more kind to stop him, to just get him out of that, what must have been a horror for him. But nevertheless, he muscled through and got through it. But like I said, I can't really feel that bad because everybody else prepared and everybody else was much, much better than him. I went second, and I feel that I delivered my pitch confidently, effectively. I knew it very well. I practiced a lot. I knew it maybe even too well. I have the suspicion that I may have rushed it a little bit. I would have to watch a video playback of the pitch, but that's just a suspicion. I'm going to say that I think I pitched it well, and I think I was confident and powerful up there. I'm happy with how I pitched it. And I'm happy with the pitch that I wrote and that I memorized and that I delivered that night. And like I said, the audience was about 150 people. So it was a substantial crowd, and it was good. I'm not really too bothered by audiences. I've had a lot of practice in front of them. And so it was good to look at all those different people in the eyes, as many people as I could, and really deliver this idea to a good, attentive, strong crowd. I would most definitely say they were. The crowd was filled with CEOs and with successful entrepreneurs and with business people. The judges were all those. So it was a stout crowd, most definitely. The event wasn't just pitching that night. There was also announcements about the CIE, which is the Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship here on campus, events, talking about different events and other programs, about teacher resources, for student teacher resources. And there were two guest speakers, brothers, who are both entrepreneurs. One's a wine entrepreneur and the other is a phone fixing entrepreneur. And they both shared a lot of wisdom. I learned some things. And it was good to hear their perspective on their journeys through building their own companies. I'm glad I sat through that and listened to it. The weirdest thing about the pitch, though, I will say, is being around all of those businessy type people is the best way to put it, I guess. You know, in suits and nice dresses and strong, firm handshakes and strong nods and gregarious, seemingly fake laughter and all the various attributes that you associate with businessy type people. When I look at myself and I'm wearing Ultras, which is a great minimalist mountain running shoe company, on my feet, because I didn't have any nicer shoes up there. So yes, I wore my running shoes. My they weren't dirty, but my gnarly mountain running shoes to this event. Up there, I mean up in here in school and college, I have nicer shoes down at home in San Pedro in Los Angeles, but I didn't bring them up here. I was wearing Prana jeans. I was wearing a cowboy belt with like all engraved and a VW buckle, like the VW car company logo buckle. I was wearing a short sleeve button down, tucked it in though, I'll say that, that had carabiners printed all over it. I was wearing a bunch of jewelry, necklace, bracelets, rings. I had my clear glasses on and then of course my long hair. So I'm confident, as in most cases in my life, I presented a very distinct image, shall I say, but it was one that I purposefully crafted, I guess you can say. It went in line, goes in line with my company, with Target Release Recovery. It goes in line with my personality and with who I am. So I wasn't embarrassed or ashamed for wearing that stuff and not wearing something more traditional. And I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. The clothing choices, the pitch, the outcome, well, of course, I would have liked to win, but those are the cards I've been handed, nor the dynamic of the audience, just everything. I really did have a great time. It was a wonderful experience for me, a gratifying experience for me, and one that gave me a lot back. And overall, it was just a fun experience, and I really honestly didn't expect it to be so fun. I really did have a wonderful time, and I'm glad I did it. And I wouldn't have been able to do it at all without practice. And that is why I told this story second, even though it technically happened before the protest in Santa Barbara or the fact that I watched four movies this weekend. It happened last Wednesday. And I usually like to tell my stories in a chronological order, but it ties into what we're going to be talking about from today's title, which is consistency. And I wouldn't have been able to do this pitch without a history of consistency in my life and consistency practice with this specific pitch. And what I mean by a history of consistency is I've had, like I said, a multitude of experiences with presenting in front of an audience. I was in an intense drama program, theater program in middle school, which sounds funny to say, but I've told stories about it before. It very much was, in my perception, as much as I know about it, a Broadway level seemingly theater program. It was extremely, extremely difficult. And it forged me very much into the person I am today, built a lot of the confidence that I have today, and provided me a lot of opportunities for personal growth that I am forever grateful for. There was a lot of negatives about that experience, specifically the tyranny of the teacher. She was a terrible, terrible person that got results, incredible plays and musicals from these middle schoolers, but she led them with an iron fist. Nevertheless, like I said, a deeply beneficial yet difficult experience there in drama in middle school, and one that did teach me consistency from the countless, countless hours of rehearsal that we would have to do. There would be days where we would get out of school at 3:08, start rehearsal at 3:30, and go until 6:30, and that would be 4 days out of the week, 5 days out of the week, every day after school pretty much. And then we would rehearse on weekends for 6 hours, 4 hours, you know, both days, hours and hours and hours. Dress rehearsals were 11 hours each, Saturday and Sunday. So like I said, an intense program that taught me and in the basic things of memorizing a script and practicing your role and everything, but just the ability to show up every day and have to do this again and again and again. This program imbued me with the ideals of being consistent from a very young age and taught me how to be consistent and how to commit to something. And it, if it gets tough, shut up, suck it up, learn from it, move on, persevere, endure. And that played into ultra running and everything else that came after. I was in choir in my church for a year and a half, which was, again, a wonderful experience. And again, taught me how to be in front of an audience, taught me how to show up every week for rehearsal. The podcast, of course, helps me with public speaking. Even though this isn't technically public speaking, it is a form of it, I would say. And then I took a public speaking class last fall, so a year ago now, in my first quarter here at Cal Poly, which again, put me in front of an audience, gave me the practice of practicing public speaking. So all of these experiences and more really did and have imbued in me, like I said, a sense of consistency and an ability for consistency in my life to apply it on a day-to-day basis to build the skills necessary to accomplish something, whether that's training for a race or rehearsing for a play or practicing for a choir performance or practicing for a public speaking talk in your class or practicing a pitch that you're going to pitch in front of an audience for an award, hopefully. So all of these various experiences really did provide me the background to practice this pitch well and to know how to practice it. Because that's really the second part of everything that you don't really consider is you can practice all day you want, every day you want, if you want. But if you don't know how to practice, if you don't know what you need to focus on, if you can't recognize your weaknesses, and that all comes from listening to your body, listening to yourself, you're not really going to get anywhere. And that's really what I've learned through all my practice of being consistent in practicing, which sounds odd, but it's really, that's what it has taught me, is being consistent. And that is what brought and has brought a lot of what has come in my life in a positive sense. And that's really what I've learned about myself. One of the main things I've learned about myself in these 150 episodes is commitment, is consistency, because I have to sit down every week. Not have to, that sounds negative. I sit down every week. I make myself sit down, even if I don't want to or don't feel like it, every week to talk about such and such idea or to talk with such and such person. It's helped me. I mean, the simplest way of putting it is it's helped me better myself. That commitment aspect of it, that consistency aspect of it has deeply shaped me and forged me into the person I am right now. And continues to do so every single week as we progress through this show. It's a wonderful tool. The podcast, I mean, is a wonderful tool for learning consistency because you know that it's coming. I know that it's coming every week. I know that I have to be ready every week. It's not just a responsibility to the audience or to the guest I'm going to have on. I treat it as a responsibility to myself because as my dad says, if you're not doing your best, you're only fooling yourself. And I don't want to fool myself because I want to grow into a better person, which is what I hope I kind of instill in you as the listener and help you do as the listener on this show, is to be better by embracing consistency, embracing the discomfort that comes with it. But what you can learn from it is even more precious. Each week, the week in, week out nature of the show has really helped me formulate, question, and then reevaluate all of my ideas and perspectives on the world. Because I share an idea every week, whether that's in a solo episode or an interview episode, those two aspects of the show, if it's a solo episode, it's helped me think about what I'm going to be talking about each week, think about my thinking, as I learned in philosophy class last quarter in spring, to really refine my ideals and ideas about the world. And then when it's an interview show, of course, I learn about myself and life in general from the guest that I have on. Now, as I'm kind of moving through this whole idea about consistency, I want to read you a quote from the Dhammapada, which I read from a lot, I know, but it's a wonderful book. If you haven't read it before, I highly recommend it. This translation is by Gil Fronsdahl. And again, the Dhammapada is the Buddha's sayings, the Buddha's teachings, kind of the summary of them. It's what he said, but it's the, I guess you could say, the spark notes of Buddha's teachings, because there is a infinite, seemingly almost, amount of texts of what the Buddha said or is said to have said. But I digress. This is chapter 18, corruption, verse 239. Here it goes. As a smith does with silver, the wise person, gradually, bit by bit, moment by moment, removes impurities from herself. And I'll read it again, just to let that sink in and kind of let you reflect on, focus on, how it really is talking about consistency when it comes down to it. As a smith does with silver, the wise person, gradually, bit by bit, moment by moment, removes impurities from herself. This is exactly what the podcast has taught me, to better myself on a daily, consistent, continuous basis, to remove those impurities, to refine my weaknesses, to refine what I think I'm capable of, to make it into that next step, to provide that next step for myself, to take that next step of what I think is possible, to endure through those challenges, to endure through those discomforts, and to come out the other side better for it. Whether that's the simple discomfort of just not really feeling the episode that week, going into it and then finding that I'm super excited about it, or just the discomfort of all of the daily trials and tribulations that we all experience. This idea of bettering myself on a consistent basis is something that has really shown through in all of my experiences here with this podcast, because it has provided me the opportunity to do just that. To learn more and more about myself and about who I am, and to refine that truth, and to get deeper and deeper into the core of myself, into what it means to be me. And to be honest with myself about that and remove what is weak about it, what is imperfect about it, what is wrong about it. And to go forward evermore onto that line, that trail that is my truest self. And it's a process, just like the verse 239 says here, moment by moment, bit by bit, gradually. It's not going to come in one flash. It's not going to come all of a sudden. It's total perfection. I don't believe in that. I don't think it'll ever come. I don't believe that it'll ever come. But nevertheless, that's not what we're working towards. We're working on a daily, moment-by-moment basis to better ourselves, to be the best version of ourselves, to be the truest version of ourselves to ourselves. Because like I said, you're not fooling anybody but yourself if you're not doing your best. That's what my dad says, and he's completely right. You need to commit to that day in, day out process, journey, trail, if you will, of bettering yourself. And that is exactly what I've done with this show within myself. And I my deepest hope is that I've helped you do the same. And there's multiple examples of this in daily life. You prepare for a test. What do? You study consistently. Ideally, I have many friends who do not do that, cram the night before, but that is not going to lead to success. If you study on a daily basis, learn little by little, review from class in the weeks leading up to the test, you will be that much more successful on the test than your peers who cram the night before. It's about building that day in, day out process. Training for a race. What do? You train consistently. I mean, this word keeps popping up because it is key, as the title says. You run every day. You, whatever the race may be, cycling, running, whatever, you get out every day, you push your body. And I heard recently in, I can't remember what I was listening to, an audiobook or a podcast, but training really is, you're kind of outsourcing the suffering from the race. You suffer as much as you can in training so the race goes as smooth as possible. You build up that endurance, that ability to suffer as much as you can in training. So when it comes to race day, you're prepared and you have that experience. That's really what training comes down to. And how do you do that? Day in, day out, moment by moment, endurance, building that. And speaking of moment by moment endurance, a little detour here. I do just want to mention that I mentioned last week that I have a 50 miler coming up December 1st. Well, now, I did have a 50-miler coming up, but unfortunately, it has been canceled. The Ray Miller 50-miler on December 1st in Point Magoo State Park has been canceled. It's been canceled because of the fires that have been happening in the Santa Monica Mountains that I mentioned earlier in the show, which I'm sure you've heard about. Terrible, terrible wildfires that have just devastated the communities there and taken lives and homes and properties and everything in between. And I completely understand why the race has been canceled. The land has been ravaged there by the fires. And I did not, right when I heard about them and where I saw where they were, one of the fires, I knew immediately that the race was probably going to be canceled. And I was just waiting for that email from the race director, Kira Henninger. And I ran one of her other races also in the Santa Monica Mountains back in February 2017, the Sean O'Brien 100K. That was a brutal race. Fun, epic. And so I was really looking forward to the Ray Miller 50 miler, but alas, it is canceled this year. And honestly though, it's kind of a godsend because I've been really busy this quarter, and not busy in the sense of last quarter or last year, last school year, where I let a lot of things that shouldn't have gotten to me get to me and control me. A lot of things, simple life things that I just let get to my head and let them kind of push me off the trail, push me off the path as I've been talking about. Breaking my arm, for example, really kind of took me for a loop, took me out of the loop. Being away from my family, the various emotional ups and downs that I went through last year, all those various things I really did let myself become prisoner to, and it really did shape in a negative way my year last year. And I have been really working hard to not let that happen this year, and I've been extremely successful and happy up here in SLO in that sense. And so I've just been busy in the sense I've been purely busy. I've been going all around for races, for displaying and selling target release recovery tools, the base camp and the peak. I've been going home for various events back down in LA, my cousin's funeral or memorial, LA Comic Con, and then just, you know, schoolwork and the basic goings ons of life here in Cal Poly. Club activities and responsibilities, and just all the various facets of life I've been very busy with. And so through all of that, I just haven't really been, I don't want to say able to, but just training has taken a hit, and it's been tough to train at the level of a 50 miler and to get ready for a 50 miler in the way that I would want to. I struggled a lot with fatigue earlier in the quarter, about a month ago and before. Struggled a lot with fatigue over summer from the heat and everything else. So it's just been a tough ride, and I just wasn't, honestly, being honest with myself, I wasn't going to be in the place to come December 1st, mentally or physically, to run 50 miles. I could have muscled through, and I probably would have, and I probably would have gotten injured. It just wouldn't have been smart, and I probably would have done it anyways, because I'm stubborn. But I'm glad now that I don't have to feel that stubbornness, or feel that I have to do that, or anything like that, or feel any pressure from my own ego. And now I can just enjoy the fitness I built and keep building the fitness and work towards some more not organized, you know, not race wise, just purely self-planned, self-taught, self-thought adventures from right out my front door. Some cycling, running, climbing, even adventures that kind of mix all three disciplines, or cycling, running, some combination, or just even long runs that I plan in and of them myself without any other organization or race structure, and just go out and run or ride or climb and push my body and get to know the area here in SLO and around here, all the more better to just be self-powered. And I think I have, and I think I know I have a lot of good ideas for those type of adventures, and I'm excited to pursue some of those, to not feel the pressure or feel the dogma that I always need to, you know, be running a race or be working towards a race, because I don't. Just about getting out in the mountains. So that's what I'm looking forward to. And like I said, it's a bummer and it's terrible with what the fire is going on. But in other senses, it's also a good thing, for me at least. For the people who lost their homes, of course not. But for me, hopefully something good will come of it. Hopefully it will allow me to kind of refocus with the day in, day out, there you go, aspect of getting out, pushing my body, feeling some discomfort. The other arena of life that is deeply tied to consistency is the basic arena of producing content, whether that be a podcast or a blog or photos or videos or whatever it may be in our 21st century fast-paced world, producing content. How do you do that? How do you build a following? How do you build success? All those various buzzwords without consistency. If you do one-off, you're just going to be a viral sensation, if that, probably not even that. And you won't be able to build a sustainable platform there. And so consistency is key in that arena as well, to be able to get out every week, get it done every week, as it with this podcast, and share your thoughts and refine your thoughts and produce that content. Now, like I said, it might that whole idea of bettering yourself, yes, consistency is key, but it's going to get tough. It's going to get brutal. Like I said before, there are many weeks throughout these 150 episodes where I felt like I could do anything else but record the episode of the podcast, that I was just like, I don't have anything this week. I don't want to do it. But you know what? I sat down. Instead of reacting to that and just blowing it off, I took a breath and I responded. And I thought of an idea. I worked through it. I outlined it. And I talked about it, and I made that episode. It's about working through those difficulties, those brutalities, those discomforts, those pains, those sufferings, all those various words that I talk about. It's about working through those, because when you persevere through those, and you do it, you do whatever you don't want to do anyways, you do that podcast episode anyways, you go for that run anyways, you go for that cycling, you go for that ride anyways, you study for that test anyways, you build the ability to endure. You build the ability to learn from that discomfort and learn in turn how to better yourself ever more. All of these tools feed back on themselves: perseverance, consistency, commitment, presence. All of these various tools that I talk about, they all have a complex interplay that all support each other, but they only come if you build yourself into somebody that uses them. And you only do that by using them. I mean, it's kind of a weird duality here, but you just need to take the first step. It's really what I'm saying. You need to take the first step, get out there, and commit to being consistent. And whatever facet or form that comes in your life, it turns into a form of meditation. Because what is meditation but learning about yourself? And with consistency, you learn deeply about who you are, how you process and persevere through challenges or don't, and how you can do better next time, and how your body reacts and your mind and your soul and your person reacts and shifts and evolves and changes through that consistency. It becomes a self-fulfilling process almost the more and more you do it. I'm not going to say it becomes easier, but it very much does become more a part of you the more and more you're consistent with all of the various aspects of your life. And by no means am I saying we're all going to be perfect. No way. You're going to fail. You're going to falter. I failed and I falter many times in my life. But it's about getting back on that trail. It's about getting back on that path and continuing forward, taking those next steps and always moving forward, constant forward progress with those ideals in your head of presence, of consistency, of perseverance, of all these various things to help you grow. It becomes something that can be applied in all various aspects of life, work, relationships, family life, even your interactions at a coffee shop before work, athletics, spirituality, learning at school. I mean, every aspect of life can be deeply, deeply benefited by having a consistent approach to whatever the necessary action within that activity is. So, for example, for athletics, you get out for a run every day. For example, for work, You work on that project you have to complete in a month every single day, piece by piece. For example, for spirituality, you meditate every day. All these various aspects, the more you build a consistent aspect of it into your life, the more it becomes part of you and the more you can better yourself. It's not only a way to get better at something, meditation or running or that project, writing, whatever it may be. It's a way to better yourself. As I've said many times before, that's really what it comes down to. And that's really what I've learned with this podcast. And I truly hope that is what you have learned as well. So if you want to find more content from Touching the Trail, head on over to touchingthetrail.com. Read the writings. Feel free to contact me via the contact form. Always up to chat about movies, like I said earlier, or anything else. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to reach out via that form. Sign up for the Touching the Trail weekly newsletter. I'm going to get back on very, very soon. I promise you. I have a lot of ideas going forward with it, and I will update you as those ideas are implemented over the next few weeks. You can also follow us on social media at Touching the Trail on Instagram, at Touch the Trail on Twitter, and the Touching the Trail page on Facebook. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the show and share it with your friends. Spread the word, build the tribe. If you're enjoying the show every week, please leave a review. It lets me know that you're out there. It lets me know you're listening, and it lets me know that you're loving what I do week to week on a consistent basis. If you want to help support the show, please go to touchingthetrail.com/donate. To donate to the show, you can do however much you want. But as I've mentioned many times before, this show is built and based in the Buddhist concept of dana, of giving, of generosity. This tribe cannot be improved, cannot be built upon, and I cannot continue to improve and build this content without your help, without your donation. As a college student, I deeply, deeply want to make this a sustainable endeavor for me and for my future, and I can only do that with your help, with your donations. If all of you listening today just do a $1 donation on a monthly recurring donate basis, I will be able to improve this and continue this indefinitely and infinitely, it seems like. Also, you can support us by going to targetreleaserecovery.com to pick up your very own Basecamp and Peak handheld deep tissue massage tools. Find out more at targetrelease.com, and all of those links are in the show notes. Now I will leave you with a reminder, simple reminder. This week, be consistent. Commit to something. Commit to everything as much as you can. You're not going to be perfect. You're going to fail. You're going to falter, but that is not the end of the world. Learn from that as well. Respond and don't react. And always remember to go far, go further. Thank you all for listening. I will see you all next week on the Touching the Trail podcast. The Touching the Trail podcast.